Okay, we are holding on Chof Ches Amud Aleph, 8 lines from the top. We started discussing that the Mishnah had said a rule that anything that comes from a tree is, well, the first rule in the Mishnah had been that anything that comes from a tree you can't use for wicks, for Shabbos candles, except for flax. We didn't really get much into that because we already discussed the matter of wicks that we can and can't use earlier in the parak. We're focusing more on the second thing that the Mishnah had said, that anything that comes from a tree, if it's used as an oihel, if it's used as a tent, then any material that's used as a tent is going to transmit truma to other things that are underneath it. But although as we learned yesterday, you have Rishonim that say maybe not if it's attached to the ground, but whatever. The point is that we said that linen, among the things that come from trees or plants, is unique in that not only it transmits tumas oil to other things that are underneath it, but it itself becomes tame as well, which you don't have with other things. If you have, let's say, a tent made out of cotton, or if you have a tent made out of cotton, let's say, or other materials that we're going to be discussing now in the Gemara, that basically this concept that the tent itself becomes tame is going to be limited, we're going to say, only to the materials that were used for the coverings of the Mishkan. So it's going to end up being basically just wool, linen, and wool, linen, which are the bottom cover, goat hair, which is the next cover, and skins of animals, and we're going to discuss whether it includes only skins of kosher animals or also of non-kosher ones. Anyway, among all those, the only one that's a plant material is linen, and therefore we're saying that that linen is actually, the tent itself actually becomes tummy. So we started explaining that we learned that from the fact that you have a gzera shava between the word oihel that it mentions in connection with tumas oihel and oihel as is mentioned by the Mishkan. So therefore we have a gzera shava that compares them. On the other hand, we have an extra ribui because we have also in connection with tumas mes it says extra the word oihel. So therefore, we have an extra word oil. So therefore, it teaches us it doesn't have to be exactly the same. As we said yesterday, even though in the case of the Mishkan, it wasn't just any old linen. They twined the threads together. They made 6-ply threads out of them. But you don't need that. You don't need that in order for it to have the full rules of Tumas oil. For it itself to be Tumas, you just have to have that. It has to be the same material. Okay, so that's where we're up to. So 8 lines from the top of Chof Ches Amud Aleph. So the question is, the Gemara asks, the Ema Malahalim Kroshim Afkan Kroshim. If you're going to say though that it has to be an oihel like the Mishkan, then maybe say that just like the Mishkan had side beams for the sides that were made out of wood, so therefore you should say so the same thing over here. Any kind of wood. Or maybe at least only chicken wood, whatever, would be the kabel tumah as an oihel.
Wood, like tree wood.
Yes, that's the question. But now, you know, that's the question. You're saying.
Well, what about silver also? The Mishkan had silver sockets.
Sockets, though, are definitely not part of, are definitely not part of the wall. Those are bases. But in any case, first of all, here we're focusing on things that come from trees. He was focusing on things that come from trees. So therefore, we should say not only flax, which was, we said yesterday, the pasuk called flax a tree, b'kishkei ha'et, but we should say also wood in general, or at least maybe only shittim wood, because it was used for the beams. If we see that the beams are also called the oil. Tosfos asks on that. Tosfos says that no. What do you mean? Only the roof coverings are called oil. But okay, Tosfos says that Tosfos learns differently. The question is, maybe it's only called an oihel only if it has both, if it has side beams and a roof covering. So not like we're saying that we're talking about, let's say, only a tent made out of pishkan. Maybe it has to have side beams of wood, just like the Mishkan did. The answer is no. Omar Krova, Ostisa Kroshim La Mishkan. No, because the Pasuk says you should make the Kroshim, you should make the beams for the Mishkan, implying Mishkan Kari Mishkan, only the various sets of curtains are called the Mishkan. The Enkroshim, Kri Mishkan, the Enkroshim themselves are not called the Mishkan. They're called something for the Mishkan. So therefore, they're a secondary thing. So therefore, we can say the Mishkan itself is called an Oihel, because it says that's Mishkan Oihel Moed, but the beings themselves are not part of the Oihel. They're something for the Oihel, basically. So we're still back to that an Oihel is defined as something that contains flax, that contains linen. Beams are not involved, because the beams themselves are not called the Mishkan per se. Okay. The Gemara asks, Elamayat, the Vasisa Michsa La'Oihel, what about, fine, the Pasuk continues that you should make a covering for the Oihel of skins of rams and skins of tachash. So Hochi Nami Michsa La'Ikri Oihel, by that logic, are you going to say that since it says Michsa La'Oihel, a covering for the Oihel, that implies that the covering itself is not called the Oihel? The problem with that is, Ela ha de boy Rabbi Lazar. The problem is that we have that Rabbi Lazar asks a question. Or behema tmeya maushi tamed ba'oihel ames. Does the skin of a non-kosher animal become tame with intrinsic tumah, that is, as far as oihel ames? Now, what's the problem? If you're going to say, now, we have like this. We're going to learn soon that there's actually a machlokas tanoim. When we say that there was a covering of ram skin and a covering of tachash skin, does that mean two separate coverings, or does it mean one covering that was partly of one and partly of the other? Whatever the case, rams are definitely kosher animals. The tachash, as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara, we're going to discuss the question soon, was it a kosher animal or not? But definitely definitely the Oris Elam Ba'adamim came from kosher animals. Now, if you're going to say that the skin coverings of the Mishkan are not considered part of the Oihel, therefore the rule of our Mishnah about them themselves becoming Tomei wouldn't apply to them, then Hashta Ur Behema Tahod Olay Mitamei, then if you're going to say that even the skin of a kosher animal is not metame, because you would say that it's only considered michse la'oihel, it's not considered the oihel itself. Behema tmeya miboya. Would you have to ask even about the skin of a non-kosher animal, where we're not even sure if that was used in the Mishkan at all? So the fact that Rabbi Lazar is asking the question seems to imply that at least there's a possibility that if we say that the skin of a kosher animal is metamet tumas oihel, then maybe we say it applies to a non-kosher animal as well. But that presupposes that the skin covering of the Mishkan, the oris elam ba'adamim and oris tchoshim, are considered part of the oihel. So how can you say that? If you're saying that the kroshim are not considered part of the oihel because it's called kroshim la Mishkan, then the same thing over here, these things are called michse la oihel, and therefore they shouldn't count as part of the oihel, and therefore there's no room for the question at all whether they become tame as an oihel or not.
Well, then what would be the oihel? If you exclude the beams and the skins, what's left?
What's left is the bottom two layers. You have the woven curtains, the ones that are made out of a mixture of wool and linen. And instead of the Mishnah, linen is definitely included, wool also. And we would say also the ones that are made out of goat hair, which are the next layer above them. We would say those two are called the oihel, and those two, therefore, are makabal tumas oihel. If you use them as a tent or whatever, and you have a mess inside the tent, then they would become tame, but not skins at all, and whether of kosher animals or non-kosher animals, and therefore there'd be no room for Rabbi Lazar's question. The fact that he's asking the question seems to imply that skins are considered an oihel. So we're back to the question then. Well, why should they be considered an oihel, and the kroshim not?
So below the skins, you had going from outside to inside, you had the
You had goat hair, and below that you had woven. Yeah. Below that you had fabric.
Going from
the inside to the outside, you had fabric. You had ten curtains of fabric of mixed wool and linen. Above that you had 11 curtains of goat hair. And above that you had ram skins and tachish skins, yeah.
So goat hair is not skin.
Right, and therefore goat hair, fine, is going to be metabol to much oil, but not skin, that's the question. The answer is shiny hosam dahadra hadre krah. The difference is you have a different pasuk that includes the skin coverings as part of the oil of the Mishkan as well, because you have a pasuk v'nosius yirias ha-mishkan v'as oil moed. The pasuk says about the Levim, about the members of the family of Gershon in particular, they should carry the curtains of the Mishkan, the es oil moed, and they carry the curtains of the Mishkan and the oil moed, michsehu, its covering, u'michse ha-tachash ha-she'olav, and the covering of the tachash, which is on top of it, meaning, therefore, makish elyon matachtern, meaning that now we have a hekish in the pasuk between the upper curtains and the lower curtains. Ma tachtern kori oil, just like the bottom ones, the ones made out of goat hair are definitely considered, and the ones below them, which are the ones made out of wool and linen, are definitely considered an oil. Af elyon kori oil, the same way. The pasuk is mentioning also in that connection the covering of tachash, so therefore that implies that that one also is called the oil.
Tachash was what again, tachash?
Well, we don't know yet. We're going to discuss soon in the Gemara what the tachash was, in particular whether it was a kosher animal or not. But whatever it is, it was some kind of animal. As we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, it was a multicolored animal. So they used its skins for one of the coverings of the Mishkan. The point is that because we have this passage in Parashas Bamidbar that mentions all the coverings of the Mishkan and calls them all Yirias HaMishkan V'as Oyel Moed, then that means all of them are considered part of the oil. So that means, in other words, that skins of kosher animals definitely are makabel tumas oil, because rams are kosher animals. And the question now is whether that applies to non-kosher animals as well, because as the Gemara is going to say now, the question is whether the tachash was a non-kosher animal or not. So, gufa, getting into that now, boy Rav Elazar, ur behemoth mei umal shiitama tumas oil. The question is the skin of a non-kosher animal makame tumas oil? When we say that if you have an oil, that if you have a tent made out of certain kinds of materials, and there's a mess inside, then not only everything inside the tent, but even the fabric of the tent itself, the material of the tent itself, becomes tame. So does that apply to the skin of a non-kosher animal? So the question is, what is Rav Elazar's question exactly? If we're saying we're learning it from the Mishkan, by the Mishkan they use the skins of kosher animals. So where do you find that they use non-kosher animals? Amar Rav Adar Bar Abba, that's exactly it. Rav Adar Bar Abba says, that's the question. Tachash, shahoya b'mei Moshe, kami boilei. The question is about the tachash that existed in Moshe's times. As the Gemara is going to say soon, it was an animal that came about only for short-term purposes, only for them to be able to use it for the covering of the Mishkan. Also, actually, it wasn't just for the covering of the Mishkan. The Pesukim at the end of Parashas Bamidbar mentioned they also used skins of tachash for the wrappings of most of the kalim of the Mishkan. They put them at some point inside a wrap of tachash skin, so they had that also. There are beforshim based on a pasuk in Yechezkel that says that also they had enough tachashim around for the Jews to be able to make themselves shoes out of its skin. Whatever, the point is it existed only at that time. Afterwards, it disappeared. The question is, tamei haya or tahor haya? The question is, what is a kosher animal or not? If it was a kosher animal, then it means that all the skins that were used for coverings in the Mishkan came from kosher animals. In that case, you should say there's no reason to say that the skin of a non-kosher animal should be able to have tumas oil. On the other hand, if you say that the tachash was a non-kosher animal, then there you go. Then it would apply to non-kosher animals as well. So that's the question. Amr of Yosef, mighty boy, like Rav Yosef says, in that case, why does Rav Elazar even have a question? Obviously, we should know that it was a kosher animal. Tanena, because we learn in a braisa, loy hukshur l'malachas shamayim, ela or behema tahor bovad. for the purpose of the work of Shemayim, which the Gemara is assuming at this stage means any mitzvah where Hashem tells us to make something, you're only allowed to use substances from kosher animals. So the Mishkan, therefore, is Malachas Shemayim, so therefore you should only be able to use the skin of a kosher animal. We had recently in Tanya, we had recently in the daily Shir Tanya, where the Alter Rebbe pointed out the idea, because non-kosher animals, as we know, come from Shalosh Klipot HaTmeis, and therefore they can't be, therefore you can't elevate them, as usual with things from Shalosh Klipot HaTmeis, you can't elevate them to Kedusha, and therefore, therefore you have to have, the Alter Rebbe gave other examples over there, an Esrog can't be Orla, money for Tzedakah can't be stolen, etc., because, and then the same thing, substances that are used for mitzvahs, but tefillin, as the Gemara is going to say on other days, and here we're assuming for the Mishkan as well, have to be from kosher animals. So obviously, therefore, the tachash was a kosher animal. However, the Gemara says, Mosiv Rav Abba. Rav Abba says, I have a contradiction to that. So you're telling me that the tachash was a kosher animal, but we learn in a b'raisa, Rav Yehuda Oyma Shnei Mechsoi Toyu. Now you actually have a machloikas. The Pasuk says like this. The Pasuk says, V'ofsisa michsa la'oil. The Pasuk says you should make a covering for the oil, for the oil boyed. Oiras Eilam Ma'adomim, of skins of rams that are made red. And a covering of tachash skins up above. So what does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda and the Shnei Mechsoyes for you. Rabbi Yehuda says that there were actually two coverings. Echad shal oras elam ma'adamim, but echad shal oras choshen. One made out of skins of rams that are made red, and another one on top of that made out of tachash skins. Rabbi Nechemya and the Mechse echad boya. Rabbi Nechemya says there was actually only one covering. Part of it was made out of ram skin, and part of it was made out of tachash skin, meaning Rabbi Yehuda would understand the milamala at the end of the pasuk as referring specifically to the last one. It is milamala, it is over the previous one. Rabbi Nechemya, on the other hand, would say that milamala refers to both of them, that there was a covering of ram skins and of tachash skins, milamala, above the previous coverings, above the coverings made out of cloth and made out of goat hair. Anyway, so that's a side machlokas. We're mentioning that just incidentally because it's part of the braisa. Although it is interesting, there's a sicha from Tavshin Kof Vav where the Rebbe talks about the idea that sometimes we can find that a machlokas of amiroyim. Is something. Sometimes we can find a certain machlokas of amiroyim, which is not only you can find a shita between them. You can find that there's a certain regular kind of shita that they hold in other places. There was a shita in Chavav where they never talked about that you have also a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya as far as how to understand certain sukkim in Parshas Hazinu, whether they refer to the Jewish people or to the Goyim. So you have, in other words, like one of them looks at the generality and the other one looks at the specifics. And the same way that Rebbe explained that over here also you have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya are arguing about the generality or the specifics, and that Rebbe explained actually that it has to do with the circumstances in life. Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya, that Rebbe brings from various Gemaras, were very poor, but Rabbi Nechemya was even poorer than Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore each of them looked in life in a different way. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda looks at things in the more broad way, and like over here, therefore he'd rather say that there are two different coverings. Whereas Rabbi Nechemya looks at things in a narrower way, kind of, and therefore he would prefer to say that there's only one covering. Anyway, again, that's not the main point we're getting out of here. The main point is, the Braisa continues, the Doima Kamin Tola Ilon. The Tachash resembled a Tola Ilon. A Tola Ilon, Rashi says, is some kind of non-kosher animal that has spots of color. We're not real clear what it is. Jastro actually translates it as a squirrel, or a squirrel doesn't really have spots. Steinsaltz says that it may be a little creature called a genet, which has spots. Anyway, whatever it is, the point is, a tola ilan is a non-kosher animal. presumably if the Braita is comparing the Tachash to a Tola Ilan, V'Hatola Ilan Tamuhu, now a Tola Ilan is known to be a non-kosher animal, so therefore, in other words, you're saying that the Tachash was not kosher. So what are you telling me, Rav Yosef, that you can only use kosher species for Melechus Shemayim? The answer is no. No, that's not what the Braita means. It means Kemin Tola Ilanu, means it resembled a Tola Ilan because a Tola Ilan has a lot of colors, and so did the Tachash, the Loi Tola Ilan, but it's not of the species of Tola Ilan, because a Tola Ilan is a non-kosher animal, whether it's a squirrel or a genet or what have you, it's not kosher. Whereas the Tachash may have been a kosher animal. So there's no contradiction from that bright attitude of Yosef. Omer of Yosef, and in fact, Rav Yosef says, "Ihachim." It is so. If we're saying now Tachash had many colors, and the similarity to the Tola Ilan is that the Tola Ilan also is multicolored, then a hydrogen and Sfas Goina. Then now we understand why it is that the Targum Onkelos, Rav Yosef used to specialize in Targum, for one thing, because he was blind, so he couldn't learn Torah Shebichtav, because Torah Shebichtav you have to learn from a written text, and he couldn't. So he specialized in Targum. We find all over Shas where he's quoting the Targum. So now I understand why Targum Onkelos translates this creature as Sasgona. Sasgona means Shesos de Gronin Harbe. It's happy with its beauty that it has many different colors. Some of the Mephoshim point out what Rav Yosef is pleased about is the question is if the Tachash is an animal that exists nowadays, if it's an animal that doesn't exist nowadays, as the Gemara is going to say soon that it only existed in the times of Moshe, then why does the Targum Bechlal come up with a name for it? Why would it have a name in Aramaic? The Targum should have just translated it Tachash. The fact that Targum has a different name for it tells us something about the characteristics of the animal, namely that it has many colors and it's happy with that.
So we see, in other words, that
when the Braita is comparing it to a Tola Ilan, it's not comparing it in that they're the same species, which would imply that it's a non-kosher animal like the Tola Ilan. It's comparing it as far as the fact that it has many colors. So we can still stick with the explanation that we said that the Tachash was in fact a kosher animal, and therefore Rav Yosef is wondering why is Rav Elazar even asking whether the skin of a non-kosher animal is able to have tumas oil, if there's no reason to think that it did, because there was no non-kosher animal skin used in the Mishkan. As far as this matter of the Tachash, by the way, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, and Rashi also brings the explanation of the Gemara over here, that Targum Onkelos calls it Sasgona, Shasos and Mispur. There's a Sikha in Chelet Lamed Aleph where the Rebbe looks at that Rashi and analyzes it, and one thing the Rebbe points out over there is a deeper explanation of why it's so important that the animal is happy with its colors, and why specifically did that have to be used in the Mishkan? So it ever talks about the idea that the same way as with this animal, you have the various colors are an outgrowth of the fact that it's a living creature, because it's a living creature of such and such a species, and because it has certain genetics, therefore that produces a multicolored coat. Therefore, that symbolizes the way that Hashem gives life to everything in the universe, and from him come all the many different, all the multiple different colors and different things and different creations that are in the world. So therefore, the Tachash represents that, and therefore it was an appropriate thing to use for the Mishkan. And that's why we're focusing on the colors of it, because they represent the way from the one animal come many colors, in the same way as from the one Hashem come the many different things in our world. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, again, so Rav Yosef is still sticking to his guns. There's no reason for Rav Elazar to ask the question whether the skin of a non-kosher animal has tumas oil, because there were no skins of non-kosher animals used in the Mishkan. Rava Omar, Rava says, no. Actually, we have a different source for learning that the skin of a non-kosher animal can become tomei by oil ames. As follows. Titania, we learn in a brisa. You have, by Sarah, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk mentions that one of the things that can become Tomei from Sarah is leather. Now, the Pasuk could have, the Pasuk could have just said, Oi, Ur. The Pasuk, when it did the
become tame over there, it mentions oi ba'or, or in skin. The bays is extra. It could have just said oi or, or skin, or leather, whatever. So therefore, the bays is a rimoy. So therefore it teaches us it comes to teach us two things. Number one, that the skin of a non-kosher animal, that the leather made from a non-kosher animal, is able to become tameh v'tzaras. And number two, v'shalaka biyad koyin. Number two, even if it only developed tzaras after you brought it to the koyin.
Now you would have thought, in other words, the prophet says that. The pasuk says that if a garment or whatever gets tzaraas, then you bring it to the kohen, and he checks it to see whether it really is tzaraas or not. So you would think maybe it has to have had the mark on it before it comes to the kohen. Maybe if after you bring it to the kohen it develops it, nothing happens. Therefore, you need the ribui and the pasuk to tell us otherwise. And the same thing, Tosfos says, as far as the skin of the non-kosher animal. Why do we need a ribui? Because otherwise we would have thought. The pasuk previously mentions wool. Wool comes from a kosher animal, a sheep. So therefore, you would think that maybe also the leather that it's talking about is only leather from a kosher animal, so therefore we need a ribui. So okay, we have a double ribui over here, in other words, we're saying. So it includes skins, it includes leather from non-kosher animals, and it also includes if it develops the tzaraas after you brought it to the kohen. Anyway, continues the b'raisa. Suppose a person, now you have a whole catalog of things in the pasuk over there. It mentions wool and linen and shesi and erev and leather. So let's say kosas mikolon. Suppose a person cut up a bunch of small pieces of them, but also achas mehen, he sewed them all together to make one big garment. Minayin, where do we know that such a thing is also the kavol tumah of the goyim? Tamatayma oy b'chol melachas or. So therefore, the pasuk continues, or in any work that's made with leather. So now, so far from this braisa, you would say that once we say that skin, that leather of a non-kosher animal is able to become tameh from tumas negoyim because of the ribui of oy ba'or, then we make a binyan av from that and apply it to other kinds of tumah, including tumas oil. Now, of course, the problem is the ikal mifrach. Now, we could slug that up. We could say, ma'al negoyim shekein shefi ve'erev tameh behen. You could say, but you know what? Negoyim have a chumra because, as we learned yesterday, also shefi threads and erev threads are able to become tameh with tumas negoyim. So maybe only there can the leather of a non-kosher animal become tameh. How do you know that applies to other kinds of tumas as well? You're right. Ela goma mishrotin. You're right. Instead, we'll learn from a binyan av from shrotin, from the tumah of shrotin. Titani, because we have a similar braita when it comes to shrotin. When the pasuk says that leather is able to become tameh from a dead sheret, ein miela ur behema tahora. If you only had that word, you would only know that it means the skin of a kosher animal. And again, because we would compare it. We would compare it to the fact. Now, by shrotim, it doesn't mention tzemer or pishkin, unlike negoyim. So you can't say it would be similar to tzemer. But by shrotim, it does mention sak, which means sackcloth. Sackcloth is usually made out of goat hair. Goats are kosher animals. So again, without a ribui in the pasuk, you would say that the leather it's mentioning in the pasuk has to be similar to the sack. They both have to be made from a kosher animal in order to become tameh. But since the pasuk says, so ein li ala ur behemah tahara, ur behemah tmeah minayin, how do we know that it also applies to the skin, to the leather of a non-kosher animal? Tamad lema oi ur, therefore the pasuk says or leather. So therefore, again, we can learn from a binyan av, if leather is able to become tameh with a sheret, then whether it's from a kosher animal or not, then it's also able to become tameh from tumas oil. But again, the ikal of mifrach, but we could slog that up. We could say, v'ala shrotim shekein v'tamin v'padosha, because we could say shrotim have a chumra of their own that you don't have in tumas mes. Namely, as we said yesterday, even a piece of a dead sheret the size of a lentil was able to be metameh, whereas with a mess, you need a much larger piece to be metameh. You need a piece of the size of a kazayas. So maybe, therefore, we would say by shrotim, because you have that chumrah of that mitame only with only a lentil sized piece, therefore you would say it also has the chumrah that it applies to skin of non-kosher animals as well, but maybe not when it comes to tumas oil. So far we haven't yet shown, according to Rava, that skin of a non-kosher animal should have tumas oil, but let's do like this. Now we're going to do a sada shava. We're going to say, okay, if you're going to try to slog it up from shrustin because they're matan of the kadasha, okay, then go back to negoyim. Negoyim, we said, have a larger amount. There you have to be tame as tumas negoyim. You need the stain of the nega to be the size of a grist. So you would go back and forth. If you were going to say you can't learn from Negoyim because Shefti and Erev, you would say, but Shrustim, Shefti and Erev are not Tomei, and yet we see that the skin of a non-kosher animal is. If you're going to say, but Shrustim have Kadosha, Negoyim doesn't, then it still has that. So we go back and forth. Loiri Izeh, Kirizeh, Loiri Izeh, Kirizeh. Each one has a feature that the other one does not have. Atzada Shavash Behen, what do they have in common? Sha'ur Tomei Behen, that with both of them, the Torah is telling us that leather can become Tomei. And we also see that the Pasuk is telling us in both places, we have a ribui that it applies not only to the leather from kosher animals, but also from non-kosher animals. Once we have that, then we can also bring in the oil ames, sha'ur tamei boy, where also we know that leather is Tomei over there, and that we know because, as we said before, the coverings of the Mishkan definitely included the skin of a kosher animal, even if we're going to argue that the Pachash was also a kosher animal, but definitely, then there's no non-kosher animals at all, fine, but you still have a kosher animal definitely included because the rams were kosher. And on the basis of the Tzada Shava, we're going to say that by Tumas Oil also, it applies to non-kosher. It also applies to leather from non-kosher animals. So now Rava says, so again, we had Rava Lazar's question, is that so? Does Tumas Oil apply to the skins of non-kosher animals? We assume that he's asking whether one of the coverings of the Mishkan consisted of the skin of a non-kosher animal, the Pachash. Rav Yosef shot that down, at least so far, because we said the Pachash was actually a kosher animal, because otherwise it couldn't have been used for Melechas Shemayim. So Rav is saying, fine, never mind the Mishkan. We have a different source to say that the skin of a non-kosher animal is metame with Tumas Oihel, namely the Tzada Shava that we're making between the Goyim and Shrotim, whereby both of them the skin of a non-kosher animal becomes Tame, and so it should be by Tumas Oihel as well. Okay. The problem with that is, Amalei Rava mi Barnish l'Rashi, however, Rava from Barnish says to Ravashi, Ikla Mifrach, fine, but we can slog up that Tzada Shava. Because we can say, Mala Tzada Shava Shabahem, Shekhen Tmein, Lepochus Mikazayas. Because after all, fine, you're going to say each one has a feature the other one doesn't have. One has Shefti the Erev, one has Kadosha, but the other one doesn't. But the fact of the matter is, neither one do you need a full Kazayas in order to be Tamei. You need, in the case of a sheret, you only need a piece, the volume of a lentil, which is far smaller than a kezayis. In the case of negoyim, you need a skein of tzaras the size of a gris, which is also smaller. A gris is a type of bean. It's also smaller than a kezayis. The time of a mess, jain a time out of kezayis. How are you learning from that to tumas mess, where you need a full kezayis? So maybe you should say, maybe the rule would be, only by things where the shiur tumah is smaller than a kezayis, there we would say it applies to all kinds of skins, kosher and non-kosher. But when it comes to the tumas mess, where you need a kezayis, then it applies only to skins of kosher animals, which were used in the Mishkan, and we said before they're called oil, and not to the skins of non-kosher animals. So we can't learn it from the Tzada Shava. Ela Omer Rava mi Barnish. So rather, Rava mi Barnish says, We learn about the skins of non-kosher animals. We're going to learn it by a kavachomer from goat hair. We're going to say like this: goat hair, she'ein metame b'negoyim, goat hair is not one of the things that become tame with Negoyim, because as we learned the other day, you have, the Pasuk says, semer or pishtim, only wool or linen. So among fabrics, the only kind of fabrics that are matame tumas Negoyim, as we said the other day, are wool or linen. So therefore, goat hair is not included. And yet, matame ba'oil ames, yet it does become tame with oil ames, because that was one of the coverings of the Mishkan. So then the skin of a non-kosher animal, which does become tameh by Negoyim, because we just established by Negoyim, we have a ribui from the word, from the base of oy ba'or. So then, ein adin shematameh ba'oil ames. So how much more so then that it would become tameh by oil ames? So that would be what the source is. Okay. So that's that then. So the maskana
is... It would be matame because of the ribui, eh?
No. So what it is it's matame by negoyim because of the ribui from the base of butter. It's also matame by shrotim, but that's neither here nor there for the moment. What we're saying is, though, that goat hair... We're going to learn from a kavachoyim from goat hair. Goat hair is not matame by negoyim, but skins of non-kosher animals are. So then, goat hair is matame ba'oil ames, so how much more so skins of non-kosher animals?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be that then. So the maskana is that leather from non-kosher animals is matame ba'oil ames, which answers Rabbi Lazar's question. So Rabbi Lazar had started with the question, is it matame or not? The answer is that now we're saying yes, it is. Okay, so then the question is, the era had the turning of Yosef, lo huchshu l'malachas shemayim l'or behema tahor avobad. Okay, now though, let's go back to Rabbi Yosef's braisa, where he said that for purposes of malachas shemayim, of using for purposes of mitzvahs that Hashem asked us to do, you can only use or behema tahor avobad l'may huchsa. Then what halacha is it coming to teach us? Meaning, in other words, like this. If the purpose of the Braisa was to teach us that the tachash was in fact a kosher animal, it should have said the tachash that was in Moshe's time was a kosher animal. The fact that the Braisa is not saying it that way, the fact that the Braisa is saying a general rule, loy huchshu l'malachas shamayim ela ur b'hema tahor bovad, the implication is the Braisa is trying to teach us something that is negeya not just for the times of the Mishkan, but for later times as well. Now, what would be, on the face of it, it would have to be to teach us that such skin is not metamech or masoyalim. Meaning, in other words, you could say the Braisa apparently is trying to tell us that the tachash is a kosher animal, and therefore that the implication should be that only the skins of kosher animals are considered an oil, and not like Rava Midbarnish just explained to us that in fact the skins of non-kosher animals are as well. So what are we doing with that Braisa? It has to be then the Braisa is teaching us some kind of halacha that's negeya nowadays. Otherwise, it would have just said the tachash that was in Moshe's time. If it was just teaching us about the tachash, it would have just said the tachash that was in Moshe's time was a kosher animal. The fact that it says in a general way, loy huchshu l'malachas shamayim ela tahorim bovad, seems to imply that it's actually teaching us a halacha which is negeya nowadays. So what is that halacha? It's not for the fact that it's not about skins of kosher and non-kosher animals as far as Tumah V'Tahara. The answer is no. The Gemara says, what's tefillin? No. The Braisa is actually teaching us, again, as far as tefillin. Tefillin are an example of Melechus Shemayim. They're mitzvah that Hashem told us to do. Take leather of an animal and write on it certain parashiyas. And therefore, we're learning there that it has to be specifically the skin of a kosher animal that's used for the parchment. Someone says, what do you mean? Tefillin behedik sibbu. What do you mean? Tefillin, you don't need, tefillin, you don't need a braita to tell you. You have an explicit pasuk. L'man tia Torah Hashem b'picha. The pasuk says that you wear tefillin in order that the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth. And we learn from that word in your mouth, min hamotzer b'picha, that what's used to write tefillin has to be something that you would be allowed to eat. So therefore, of course, it can only be the skin of a kosher animal. So what do we need? So what do we need this rule about melachas shemayim? So first, let's ask the question. So what? I mean, okay, you have a pasuk, and the braita is giving us a general rule based on the pasuk. So Tosfos says the point of the question is that if the braita was just trying to tell us about tefillin, it would have actually quoted that pasuk. So the fact that the braita doesn't quote it, the fact that the braita just says a general rule, loy hukshu l'malachas shemayim, seems to imply that it's telling us about something more than tefillin. So again, we would assume it's telling us about the tachash. But no, elo la'olam. No, the answer is we're going to say we're not talking about the parchment that the tefillin is written on. You're right. That, of course, has to be from a kosher animal on the basis of the pasuk l'man tiyaseres hashem b'picha. But the braita wants to tell us not only that, but also the bottom of the tefillin has to be made out of kosher skin. So the Gemara says, why? You don't need a braita to tell you that. The fact that you have a shin on the outside, two shins actually, on the outside of the tefillin chorosh, a three-headed one and a four-headed one, that concept is halacha l'moshe mitinai. Now the point is that therefore you have, in effect, a letter of the Torah is written on the bottom of the tefillin. So obviously, therefore, they have to be made out. Obviously, therefore, if we're saying that the parchment that the parashiyos are written on has to be from a kosher animal, then so do the bottom, because the bottom also contain something, a letter of Hashem's name, a letter of the Torah. So again, you don't need a braisa to be telling us a rule that would include those. We know that automatically. Okay, you could ask the question, what about the bias of the tefillin shoyad? But one possibility is what we have is a hekesh between the shoyad and the shorosh. So once we have that, whatever applies to one would apply to the other one as well. With that said, yeah, but the Prima Godim wants to say that maybe the concept that the bias of the shoyad has to be of a kosher animal, he says maybe is only good up on him. That maybe this that we're saying as Allah Kalam Moshe Mishinai would apply only to the one of the shorosh, again, because it has the shins on it, maybe for the shoyad it would be good up on him. Okay. Anyway, but fine. So what is the braisa telling us that we don't already know? We already know the parchment has to be from a kosher animal. We know automatically that skin of the bias has to be from a kosher animal because it has the shin on it. Ela l'korchan b'sayron l'korchan b'gidon. So no, maybe what we'll say is, as far as the fact, we have also a din. Each of the parashiyos of tefillin has to be wrapped in hair, and the tefillin as a whole has to be sewn shut using gidon, using sinews from animals. They take certain nerves or tendons or whatever from the animal and spin them into thread and sew the tefillin with those. So you're going to say maybe the braisa is informing us that otherwise we would have thought those could have been made from non-kosher animals, and it's telling us that not. No. Honami halacha l'moshe mitinehu. No, because those details are also halacha l'moshe mitinehu. The Rambam summarizes, by the way, that you have 10 dinim in tefillin that are halacha l'moshe mitinehu, and all of these are among them. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Tefillin merubois halacha l'moshe mitinehu. That it's halacha l'moshe mitinehu that tefillin has to be square. And nechrochos b'saron. And also part of the halacha l'moshe mitinehu is that they have to be wrapped up in hair, which is made from the same species or the same substance as the cloth, as the parchment of the tefillin, meaning, in other words, that they have to be from a kosher animal. Practically speaking, what sofrim do nowadays is they usually use hair from the tail of a cow, because those are longer hairs and those are suitable for wrapping it up. And then you have a little bit of it, as you know, sticks out in the front of the shorosh. It's part of the halacha l'moshe mitinehu that they have to be wrapped up in hair from a kosher animal, but it's part of the gidon, and that they have to be sewn up using gidon from kosher animals. So therefore, so we know so far that all, so far we know that all the components of tefillin have to be from kosher animals. So what is the braisa adding that we didn't already know from the pasuk l'man tiyataras Hashem b'picha? Okay. So the Gemara says el l'resuot. Fine. Forget about the batim. Everything that's involved with the batim, fine, we've established has to be from kosher species. But maybe we need a, maybe we need the braisa to be telling us about the resuot, about the straps of the tefillin, that they have to be from a kosher animal. Says, so what do you need? What do you need that? We have Rabbi Yitzchok telling us that the halacha, another halacha of Mishnah Sinai is that the resuot need to be black. So therefore, mistama also the material of them is also part of the halacha of Mishnah Sinai. So what is Rabbi Yitzchok's braisa adding? Gemara says why? What does one have to do with the other? Nihidi miri shchoris. No, part of the halacha of Moshe Sinai is that they have to be black. We wouldn't have had from the halacha of Moshe Sinai necessarily that the resuas have to be made out of skin from a kosher animal. The braisa, when it says l'man tiyataras Hashem b'picha, is adding that the resuas also have to be from skin of a kosher animal. Now, it's interesting, before we mention the shin, now we know that there are three letters of Hashem's name. We have the name Shachai represented in the tefillin. We have the shins on the shoroish. We have the dalad knot in the back of the shoroish on the resuas of the shoroish, and we have the yud on the resua of the shoyad. So why aren't we saying the same thing? Why aren't we saying automatically we said the bias has to be made out of kosher skin because it has the shin on it? Why don't we say in the same vein that the resuas automatically has to be made out of kosher skin because they have the dalet in the yud? Why do we need the braisa to tell us? So the Rashba explains because, first of all, letters that are made by tying are not necessarily really considered letters. It's one thing the shin on the shorosh actually sticks out. It's actually made using, it's actually they take the natural folds of the leather and make it into a shin. Or nowadays, actually, what they do is they make it in a hydraulic press or whatever. But it actually, it's an actual shape of a letter that sticks out of the, it's an actual shape of a letter that sticks out of the leather of the bias. Therefore, that can be considered real writing. As opposed to a knot that's shaped like a dalet or a knot that's shaped like a yud, yeah, you have to have them, but you can't really say that they're considered writing in the same extent. Especially, that Rashba points out, you actually have an interesting opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Now, we don't follow it by halacha, but we have an opinion of Rabbeinu Tam who says that you have to remake the tsharim of tefillin every single day. He says that it's not like we do nowadays. We have the tefillin are tied for us when the sofer writes them before our bar mitzvah, and they stay tied pretty much permanently for the next 70 years or however long. So Rabbi Natan actually learns that you have to actually untie them and retie them every day. So according to him, certainly it's not considered any kind of permanent writing if you only have it for a short amount of time at a time. So fine, the halacha is not like him, but still we can't say that those knots in the tefillin should be considered actual writing. So if it weren't for the braisa about lehukshur lemalachas shemayim ela tahurim bovad, we taka wouldn't know that the resuas have to be made out of kosher skin. That's what the braisa is adding for us. And by the way, you have something else that comes out of this as well. Once we're saying the rule that lehukshur lemalachas shemayim ela tahurim bovad, then that also, in particular, another area where that applies in Torah is as far as a shofar. So it mentions it, so the Magen Avraham brings, and the Alter Rebbe brings it in his Shulchan Aruch, that a shofar from a non-kosher animal would be possible. Because, again, it's Melechas Shemayim, it's a mitzvah that Hashem tells us to do with something that came from a living creature, and that living creature has to have been a kosher animal. So no shofar is from non-kosher animals.
Not but one second, a shofar is not, is the braisa talks about air, not about shofar.
That's true, and actually Tosfos asked the question when we were in the middle of the discussion over here, and we were saying that maybe the braisa is telling us about the giddim and about the hair, then you'd have to ask why is it using the word air? But nevertheless, maybe, okay, it was using the word air in a looser sense. It means any material from an animal. But once we say that, once we say that everything in Tefillin, including now we're saying the Ritzuas, even though they're not, the bias itself has to be made from a kosher animal, then the Magen Avraham extends that also to a shofar. And a shofar has to be from a kosher animal.
Yeah, don't send any pictures of Baruch to other people besides the direct family. No Dini, no Kobe, no Bobby Kaplan.
Who's that? Okay. Okay. So that's the maskana so far, is that that's what Rabbi Yosef's braisa is teaching us, is a din of tefillin. Okay, but now let's get back to the tachash. My havi alo the tachash shahoyu b'nei Moshe.
It's still not foolproof that you can derive everything from a skin. That's not foolproof.
Okay, but nevertheless, that's what the Magen Avraham says, and that's what's accepted by halacha. I think you have poskim who say that maybe b'diyeved, if all you have available on Rosh Hashanah is a horn from a non-kosher animal, then fine, b'diyeved, you blow it. Maybe you don't say the bracha on it, but at least you blow it, and maybe you yotze, maybe not. But the lachatchila, of course, you should be using from a kosher animal. Okay, fine. The Gemara says, my having Allah. The tachash shahoyu b'mereshe. Okay, what's the bottom line as far as the question of the tachash? We discussed before, was the tachash a kosher animal? Was it not? What's the story? Amr of Ila, Amr of Shimon Lakish, Omer Hoyer Meir. So the Meir used to say like this, tachash shahoyu b'mereshe, beriyu b'fnei asma hoya, it was a unique species of its own. It wasn't any species that we have nowadays. The Chachamim were not able to determine whether it's a chaya, whether it's a wild animal, or whether it's a behema, a domestic animal, which has a few different implications in halacha. One of them being, if you shecht it, are you allowed to eat its chelev? Another one is, do you have to cover its blood? But what we do know, it had one horn on its forehead. It was made available to Moshe only as a temporary thing, only as a one-time thing. Moshe used the skin of it for the covering of the Mishkan, and as we said, also for the coverings for the kalim of the Mishkan, and some say also for shoes. The nignaz, and then afterwards it was hidden away. So the point is, since we're saying that it had one horn on its forehead. That proves, therefore, that it was a kosher animal, because only kosher animals have horns. If that's the case, if only kosher animals have horns, then it would mean that what we just discussed about the Magen Avraham about a shofar on Rosh Hashanah would be neither here nor there, because you wouldn't have any non-kosher species that has horns anyway. There's actually an interesting Tosfos in Cholin in the sugya about kosher and non-kosher animals that discusses this point. In other words, Tosfos mentions over there, as the Gemara over here is going to say, actually, that you have chayis and you have behemoths that have horns, and therefore we can't be sure. So there are actually some mafoshim who explain that the vote is that maybe only the rule, the Gemara elsewhere mentions a rule, the Gemara in Nida mentions a rule that any animal that has horns automatically has split hooves, meaning that it's a kosher animal, but there is actually another Tosfos there in Cholin that says that maybe only this rule applies to chayas. Maybe when it comes to behemoths, you could have ones that have horns, but nevertheless are not kosher, and therefore the Magen Avraham's rule would apply to them. So the point is, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, the fact that it had a horn shows that it was a kosher animal. Where do we see that? The Amr of Yehuda, Shor Shehikriv, Odomerishin, Keren Achas Soisul of the Mitzchay. The ox that Odomerishin brought as a korban, we find that after the Chetet Adaf, it says that when Adam did tshuva, and it says that you have a Gemara over there, you have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that says that it started becoming dark, and he was afraid the whole world is becoming dark, and then afterwards he realized it's this natural thing of the world, that the sun rises and sets every day, and the days become shorter in the winter. So the Gemara says over there that he brought a korban, shor shehikr of Adam Rishon, the ox that Adam brought as a korban, keren achat toisel of the mitzvah, it had one horn on its forehead, shenemar, the seat of Lashem Mishur Pur Makrin Masis. You have a pasuk in Tehillim where David asks that his tefillah should be more acceptable by Hashem than a shur par, than an ox, which is a par. And the Gemara explains like this. The Gemara elsewhere explains the word shur can mean an animal even on the day it's born. The word par, on the other hand, means an animal that's a couple of years old. So a shur par would mean on the day it's born, it already is a fully grown animal, a par. Now, that only applies to the one that was created by Ma'aseh Bereishis, by the one that was created by Ma'aseh Bereishis, because, all the creatures by Ma'aseh Bereishis were created fully grown. And the pasuk says makrin makris, which has a horn and which has hooves. So therefore we see that, so David is asking that his tefillah should be more accepted by Hashem than Adam Rishon's korban was. So we see that it had only one horn. So the question is, what do you mean makrin tarki mashma? What do you mean? The word makrin implies that it has horns, that it has its full number of regular horns. The answer is Omer of Nachmi is called mi keren. Okay, but the way it's written in the pasuk is without the yud, so therefore it can be read. We can read it as if it had different nekudos, as if it said mi keren from a horn. So we see that it was an animal that had only one horn, and Adam brought it as a korban. The Ritva says a little bit differently. He says because it's missing the yud, therefore that implies it was missing a horn also. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara is assuming that just like that creature, that ox, had only one horn, and it was a kosher animal, the Gemara is assuming that the tachash, which as we said also has one horn, is also a kosher animal. Not necessarily that it's the same species, but we're going to learn one from the other.
If every kosher animal, every horned animal is kosher, why the Torah doesn't give this siman instead of saying split hooves and all the other simanim?
Because not all kosher animals have horns. As you can say, every one that's kosher has horns, but there are plenty of ones that are kosher that don't. So if we only use horns as a sign, then we would be excluding a lot of animals.
How many animals don't have horns that are kosher?
I don't know, but I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. So that's it. It serves as sort of a secondary sin. And you have a Gemara in Cholin that says, suppose you find an animal that its mouth is cut up, so you can't tell whether it chews its cud. Its feet are cut up, so you can't tell whether it has split hooves. So one thing is, the Gemara mentions over there that if it has horns, then you're okay, because if it has horns, then you're okay. So again, you have Rishonim who learn, so you have Rishonim who learn over there that what it means is that would only apply if it's a wild animal, because if it's a domestic animal, then they might have horns and still not be kosher. And others say that it applies to both. So those Tosfos over there that discuss the whole question, that we're saying that it has horns, is that enough always, or does that maybe only apply to a chaya and not to a behemoth? Okay. Anyway. Okay. So the point is, in other words, the Gemara is saying again, if the ox that Adam brought as a korban is kosher, because it's an ox after all, it's from a kosher species, and it had one horn, then the same thing, the tachash, which had one horn, we can also assume is a kosher animal. Yeah, there's a pirush of maral on a ganta that where he explains that basically the deeper idea of the fact that these animals had only one horn is they in that way, so they had a horn. The pashtos, he assumes it was in the middle of their forehead like a unicorn. Therefore, it represents the idea of being exactly in the middle, exactly balanced, not to one side or the other, which is how a person should be. As we know, the famous thing that Rambam says that a person in general should always stick to the middle way. So therefore, that was the appropriate korban for Adam, who's the ancestor of all human beings. It was also appropriate for the Mishkan, which is where Hashem's Shekhinah has been at rest among humanity. And therefore, the assumption is that both of them are the same in that regard. They're both kosher animals, therefore.
Okay.
What about a rhino? Rhino has a horn. What is it exactly? It's not kosher.
Well, first of all, the rhino's horn is not necessarily a horn. It's not really a horn per se. It's actually more made out of like a bunch of hairs that are twisted together. It's pretty hard, but it's not. I mean, it functions as a horn, but it's not necessarily. But besides that, anyway, we're talking about horns on the animal's head. The rhinoceros's horns are not on its head, they're on its nose.
So an elephant's horns is not really a horn.
That's not a horn at all. That's a tusk. It's a tooth. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, the Gemara says, "Belishet minay." Okay, once you're telling me that Adam Rishon's ox that he brought as a korban had one horn, and you're saying the tafash is the same way, then that should be the answer. We said the Chachamim weren't sure if the tafash is a kosher animal or not. Knew that should be our answer. If it's like Adam Rishon's ox, then it must be a behemoth, just like an ox is a behemoth. The Gemara, the belishet minay, the min behemoth. Shouldn't you be able to prove from that it is a type of behemoth? The Gemara says no. Given the ikka keresh, because on the other hand, you also have a creature called a keresh, the min chayahu, which is on the other hand a type of chaya, the less like el chod keren, and it also only has one horn, ikka lemeima, min chayahu. So now you don't know. You have two creatures, you have two known creatures that have one horn, other magician's ox and the keresh, one is a behemoth, one is a chaya. Therefore, the tachash, which only showed up in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, and it only has one horn, the Chachamim couldn't be sure whether it was a chaya or whether it was a behemoth. Okay. The bottom line is, though, the Gemara seems to have concluded that the tachash was a kosher animal, although you have, I mean, the conclusion is not quite so clear, and you do have Mephoshim, and you do have various explanations that want to say that maybe the tachash was, in fact, not a kosher animal. Okay. All right. Mishnah says, Silas HaBeglin, suppose you have a wick made out of a piece of cloth, Shekipla, where you wrapped up, you folded up the piece of cloth, like you twisted the cloth to make a wick, V'loi Yivhava, but you didn't singe it. You, like this, usually with a wick, you singe it, you light it, and then you put it out in order to make it easier to light later on. Here, you didn't do that. So therefore, what's the din of it? Rabbi Eliezer oy matmeya hi ve'ein matlikin ba. Rabbi Eliezer has two dinim on it. Number one, it's still makabel tuma if it was at least 3x3 exboys, as we learned a couple of days ago. The fact that you twisted it into a wick does not yet make it no longer a beged. If you had singed it, if you had partially burnt it, then it would, for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss. The Gemara is going to discuss a couple of possible explanations of our Mishnah. So therefore, so it is makabel tumah, and also as a separate din, he says you're not allowed to use it to light Shabbos candles for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva, I'm a tahor. Rabbi Akiva says no, it's tahor, it's not makabel tumah anymore because once you twisted it to make a wick, it's not considered a beged anymore, so it's not makabel tumah. Or madlikinba, and you would be allowed to use it to light Shabbos candles. So the Gemara starts off. The shleimel inyan tumah b'hotligi. I can understand their machlokas when it comes to tuma, because what's the machlokas? The Rabbi Eliezer stava kipul enim moyo. Rabbi Eliezer holds the fact that you twisted it to make a wick doesn't change anything in its status. But after all, you could always untwist it, and then you'll have a regular piece of cloth again. So therefore, it still retains its original status. Before, it was a piece of cloth, at least 3x3 exposed, so it was makabel tuma. And by the way, we learned before that concept of 3x3 only applies to wool and linen. And since at the beginning of the parak we learned that you can't use wool for wicks for Shabbos candles because it doesn't burn well, so we have to be talking about a piece of linen cloth. So Rabbi Eliezer would say that it still retains its original status. It's still makabel tuma. So that part we understand. But Rabbi Akiva saw a people model. Rabbi Akiva, meanwhile, would say that wrapping it, that twisting it, does change its status. Now you made it into a new kind of keli, ubatule batul. Therefore, it's batul from being a keli, from being a piece of cloth. So now it's not makabel tuma anymore. So that part we understand. Ela, you didn't have luck of a Maya Kligi. But what's the argument as far as lighting Shabbos candles? You're allowed to light Shabbos candles with something that's Makabel Tumah. So who cares whether it's Makabel Tumah or not? The answer is Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Ishia, V'chein Amar Rav Adar B'Abba, Hocha B'Gimel Al Gimel Mutzum Tzomai Saskinen. The Mishnah is talking about a case where the piece of cloth was exactly 3x3 etzvos, over Yom Tov Shechalias Erev Shabbos Saskinen. We're specifically talking about on Yom Kippur. We're not talking about a regular Erev Shabbos like we had earlier in the parak, for example. We had a din about not using Shemen Sefer, about not using oil of Truma that became Tomei. And we said over there, according to one explanation, we said that was talking specifically on Yom Tov that comes out on Erev Shabbos. So the same thing we're saying over here, that our Mishnah is also talking about Yom Tov that comes out on Erev Shabbos. So the problem is like this. We're going to start by assuming that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva would agree with Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar, where Rabbi Yehuda says on Yom Tov, Masikin b'kelim, the ein masikin b'shivre kelim. Rabbi Yehuda would say like this: you're allowed to on Yom Tov, you're allowed to use for firewood kelim, because they're not mukta, they're kalim. Therefore, if you have nothing else to make a fire with, then you're allowed to use kalim. But he says you would not be able to use broken kalim. If a kalim broke on Yom Tov, you can't, a wooden kalim, let's say, you can't say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, well, now it's broken, I can't use it for anything else anyway, let me throw it into the fire. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do that because he says this kalim that broke on Yom Tov is nolad. We learned previously. We learned previously that you have a machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about the scope of the dinim of mukta, where Rabbi Yehuda is more machmir, has a broader definition of mukta, and Rabbi Shimon has a narrower definition. We talked about that in the first parak. Part of that is that Rabbi Yehuda holds that noilad is mukta, and Rabbi Shimon holds that it's not. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a broken so a keli that breaks on Yom Tov is mukta on the grounds of Noilad. In other words, as soon as...
How is it Noilad if it's broken? Noilad means something can be used.
It means something that has a new status. So before it was a keli, and you could use it for, let's say, a cup or whatever, and now it's not a keli, now it's usable only as firewood, so its status has changed. That's an example of Noilad. So a similar kind of thing. For example, an egg that was laid by a chicken. The egg existed inside the chicken before, but now it was born, now it was laid, and therefore it has a different status. Okay. So in other words, if we take Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, then we would say that when a keli breaks on Yom Tov, you can't use it as a wick, or you can't use it as firewood. Also, we're going to assume Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Adar B'Abba are saying, "Dekula alma islu de'ula." Everybody agrees with Ula, the Omer Ula, namely Ula says a din, Hamadlik, Tarach Shiyadlik, Veroiv Hayotei. When you're lighting the Shabbos, the Yom Tov candle, you can't just touch the flame to the wick. You have to continue lighting it until most of what sticks out of the lamp or the candle is lit. Because as we learned at the end of the previous parak, at the beginning of our parak, you have to have Ad Shetei Shel Heves Olameleah. You have to have that the flame will rise up on its own. So therefore, in order to do that, you have to light most of what sticks out. So when you're lighting the candle, you're going to be handling and using this wick, which according to Rabbi Yehuda, may be mukta. Now you have actually, by the way, it's not, you know, this that was saying that you're lighting it. I mean, you're not really moving it. Usually the issue is to move mukta. But over here, what it is that you are. I mean, you're using it as you're lighting it. That's considered using mukta. So once it's lit and eventually it burns down, then fine, you would be allowed to have hanah from it. But here we're talking about that while you're lighting it, you're using mukta, and that would be also if we say it's mukta. So the point is like this. So now we can understand the machlokas of the Mishnah. So like this, Rabbi Eliezer saw a kipol ein mayo. Again, like we said before, Rabbi Eliezer holds the fact that you twisted it to make a wick doesn't change its given to advocate court to have a shepherd, baby. When you first touch the flame here, then it becomes, now remember, it started out as exactly 3x3. So as soon as you touch the flame here and a tiny bit of it starts burning, then already it becomes a shever kevi, it becomes a broken kevi, the chika madlik, and when you continue lighting, which again we said that Ula says just touching the flame there is not enough, you have to keep the flame there long enough for it to actually fully catch on fire, so then the shever chika madlik, you're lighting using a shever kli, you're lighting using a broken kevi, and you're lighting using a broken kevi, and Rabbi Eliezer says therefore it's no good. But that's why Rabbi Eliezer would say that you can't use it. Not on a regular Erev Shabbos, but an Erev Shabbos which is Yom Tov. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would say, Kipul Moyel, no, twisting it is effective, it changes its status. Now, to begin with, as soon as you twisted it, and you had to have done that before Yom Tov, because you're not allowed to make wicks on Yom Tov, so you had to have made the wick before Yom Tov. Once you did it already, then it became a broken keli. The Ein Teras Kliola, that no longer has the status of a Kali, as soon as you made it, unlike Rabbi Eliezer, the Chikam Mablik, the Eis Ba'amah Kamablik. So now when you're lighting it on Yom Tov, which is Erev Shabbos, no problem. It's just like a piece of wood. And there's no problem with lighting it on Shabbos. So that, on Yom Tov. So that would be the Machlokes. That's why Rav Oshia and Rav Adav Ava are explaining. That's how the two parts of each of Rabbi Eliezer's statement and the two parts of Rabbi Akiva's statement relate to each other. Because when we're saying it is Mekabel Tuma, according to Rabbi Eliezer, amounts to saying it is still a case. And when Rabbi Akiva says it's not Mekabel Tuma, amounts to saying it is no longer a case. And therefore, you have the question, now when you're lighting it, are you now lighting with something that changed from being a keli to not being a keli or not? Amr of Yosef, so Rav Yosef says, Hainu de Taneinu Gimel al Gimel Mitzvim Tzomus. Now I understand that when I was in Yeshiva, we learned a braisa that mentioned a piece of cloth exactly 3x3 esbos, v'lo yadayna l'maychusa. I didn't understand what that braisa was meant to be. It can't mean that only if it's 3x3 esbos is it makabel tuma and not larger than that, because of course that's not correct. If it's makabel tuma at 3x3 esbos, makabel tuma obviously in larger pieces. So why did the Braitha insist on saying 3x3 exactly? The lawyer Dinah, my hill, so I didn't know what it was relevant to. Now I understand it was relevant. That Braitha was meant to explain our Mishnah, that our Mishnah is talking about where the piece of cloth started as 3x3 at first. Okay. I mean, if we have a couple of extra minutes, we can go. If we have a couple of extra minutes, then we can go another 10 lines further.
Okay.
If you all are okay. Okay. So the Gemara says now, by the way, a side thing. Okay. So fine. So we have Rav Adav Ava's and Rav Elazar's explanation that this is the situation in the Mishnah. We're talking about a piece exactly 3x3 esbos, and the question is it still considered a keli? And the premise is that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about Mukta. So the question is, given to come a tariff of Adav Ava al Libid Rabbi Yehuda, given that Adav Ava is explaining on Mishnah in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Shma Minok Rabbi Yehuda, clearly. Evidently, Rabbi Adav Ava agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. The problem is, Umi Omer of Adav Ava Afi, did Rabbi Adav Ava actually say that? We find in a different place where Rabbi Adav Ava actually holds like Rabbi Shimon. Namely, the Ha'omer of Adav Ava, Nochri Shechokah Kav B'Bakas, if on Yom Tov a goy took a piece of wood and carved out in it a kav, either a kav can mean a measurement, so it can mean he carved out a measuring container that holds a kav. Kav can also mean a wooden leg, like for a person who had their leg amputated. So whatever it is, in other words, again, it's Nolad. You have before it was a piece of wood which was meant for firewood. Now it's a keli. So it's the opposite of what we said before about a broken keli. Here we have it was made into a keli on Yom Tov. So Rav Adav Ava says he's still mastika by Yom Tov. A yid would be allowed to use it for firewood on Yom Tov because it's not mukta. So the question is, Vamai, Noilad, isn't it an example of Noilad? And according to Rav Yehuda, it should be also to use it on Yom Tov. So what is Rav Ava? So again, why is Rav Adav Ava insisting on explaining on Mishnah like Rav Yehuda when he himself doesn't hold like Rav Yehuda? The answer is okay, but the brain did Abu Yazir would have a kiva karma. Okay, he's saying he wants to tell us what he wants to tell us how we explain what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are saying. The he himself doesn't agree with that. He himself holds like Rabbi Shimon, who has a much narrower definition of muktzah. In particular, Rabbi Shimon doesn't care about nolad, and therefore, when he explains the Mishnah, the Mishnah itself is best explained, according to him, by assuming they hold according to Rabbi Yehuda, but he himself would say that the halacha is not like our Mishnah anyway, because the halacha, in other words, that it, the situation in our Mishnah is neither here nor there anyway, because the halacha, according to him, would be like with Shimon, you would be allowed to use a broken keli or a newly made keli for firewood on Yom Tov, and therefore it wouldn't really matter whether this is considered to be Makabel Tumah or not. By the way, as far as practical halacha, what we do is with Shabbos we hold that muktzah is according to Rabbi Shimon's definition, the narrower definition. When it comes to Yom Tov, we hold like Rabbi Yehuda's definition. So in particular, nolad is also on Yom Tov; it's generally not also on Shabbos.
Why we hold it by both?
Because what we say is, in general, we hold like Rabbi Shimon. In many areas of Hilchos Shabbos, we hold like Rabbi Shimon. But when it comes to Yom Tov, the Gemara explains in Beta that we don't want people to get careless with the Kedusha of Yom Tov. As it is, there are certain malachas you're allowed to do on Yom Tov. We know you're allowed to cook, you're allowed to carry, etc. So therefore, the Chachamim were concerned that people are going to get careless and think that we can do whatever we want on Yom Tov. So therefore, the Chachamim made certain details of the halachas of Yom Tov, in particular, the dinim of Muktzah, more stringent on Yom Tov, in order that people remember that Yom Tov you have to be careful about as well.
But technically, it applies to both?
What do you mean technically it applies to both? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it would apply to both. According to Rabbi Shimon, it wouldn't apply to either one. So what we do is we take a middle ground. We do it on Shabbos one way and on Yom Tov the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fine. So we'll continue on with the Shabbos, Bez Hashem. Let's see. Shabbos now ends. Let's see. This week Shabbos ends what? Shabbos ends 8:15, so I guess shall we say 9:15?
Okay, sounds good.
One second. Shabbos ends
8:15.